This week is the week before Rosh Hashanah, this Shabbos. Obviously, the parsha has to be connected to Rosh Hashanah. The lessons must be connected to Rosh Hashanah. We are going to have one more Rosh Hashanah class next week, Monday night. It's going to be a specific class towards Rosh Hashanah. This class tonight is going to blend the parsha with Rosh Hashanah. The relationship of the parsha, the connection to Rosh Hashanah, with hopefully a good and inspirational, powerful message. So at the beginning of the parsha, we talk about Atam Nitzavim. It opens up with Moshe Rabbeinu gathering the Jewish people together, and he is bringing them into a covenant. This is the day of Moshe's passing, the seventh day of Adar, and Moshe is speaking to the entire assembly of the Jewish people, and he says, Atam Nitzavim Hayoim Kulchem, you are all standing here together. And he goes on to enumerate all the people, their heads, the tribes, elders, all the various different people. Ten categories of people comprising all of the Jewish people. Because the Jewish people are rooted in the ten sefirot and the ten attributes. That's why we are divided in ten different types of Jews. That's why in order to have the divine presence in the world, you need to have ten Jews together. That brings God down. Because when you have ten Jews, you have one Jew from every type. So it's as if every single Jew is in the room with 10 Jews. That's one of the very fascinating ideas about a minyan. The reason why a minyan is sometimes so hard to get, it's not always so easy to put together a minyan, is because when you put together 10 Jews, you have the entire Jewish nation there. Because every Jew symbolizes another facet. So Moshe gathers, but this time he gathered literally all the Jews, all the 10 types. They were all there. And what's the point of it? The pasuk says, La'avrecha bebris, to make you cross in a covenant, to make an agreement with God. This was a covenant, a new bris, a covenant that Moshe is making with the Jewish people, and with the oath. And Hashem is sealing a covenant about shmiras ha-mitzvahs, about the observance of mitzvahs. God is saying to us that we better listen to His commandments, and then everything is going to be wonderful and good, and if we don't listen, it's not going to be so good. That's the general idea of what He discusses in this covenant. As it continues, the next pasuk, Lamam hakim oischa, in order to establish you, Hayom, today, Loi La'am, that you should be for a nation for God, and God is going to be our God. We're going to be His people. He's going to be our God. And that's the purpose, seems to be, of the covenant. The question the commentators ask, everybody asked the question, I mean many commentators, asked the question, why do we need this covenant? We had already a covenant. We became a people already earlier at Har Sinai. This is 40 years later. This is at the threshold of the land of Israel, the last day when Moshe is speaking to them, when he's ready to give over the leadership to his student and disciple, the next leader of the Jewish people, Yeshua ben Nun, Joshua. So what does it mean? Now he's making a covenant that they will become Hashem's people when there has been a covenant already made at Sinai, made at Har Sinai. So what's new over here? And why was this covenant necessary? So Nachmanides offers his explanation. And he suggests that the first covenant was broken, because what was the agreement? The agreement is that we're going to be loyal to God. He is our God, and we have no other God. But then just 40 days later, the Jewish people broke that covenant, and we made a golden calf. And because of that, we needed a renewed covenant. And he says, not only that, it was with the golden calf, and also almost just right before this covenant, at the end of the 40 years, the Jewish people were persuaded or seduced by the Yetzahara, by the Avodah Zarah Pa'or, with the Moabite women, in which they brought the Jewish people to serve the Avodah Zarah of Pa'or. So we had two times a breakage in the covenant. So Hashem now has to renew the covenant. But what's going to assure us that the second time the covenant is going to hold more than the first time? That is the reason why it is in this covenant in which Hashem introduced, this covenant was accompanied by an oath and a curse, a serious curse. So that was meant to scare the Jewish people and tell them, this one you're not going to break. This one has to stay. This one we can't mess with. And that's the reason of the second covenant. Similar to that, Rabbeinu Bachaya gives his explanation. The Alshech asks the question, offers an explanation. Abarbanel offers an explanation of why there needs to be a second covenant over the first covenant in which we had. Others want to say that, seems to be from the Gemara, necessity of the second covenant was because this time we took responsibility for each other. At Har Sinai, there was a pact, there was an agreement made between God and every single Jew as an individual, and that we are responsible for our observance. We made a commitment that we're going to keep the Torah, we're going to keep the mitzvahs. And a person is held responsible if they break that covenant. But we weren't responsible for each other's performance of mitzvahs or lack of observance. But at this point, Hashem says that I'm holding you responsible one for the other, as it says later in the parsha that Hashem says, "Hanistareis l'Hashem elokeinu v'aniglois lanu l'vaneinu," which Rashi learns from here that there was in this time, there is a responsibility of every single Jew for everybody else's actions. We're all together. We're all in one boat. And if one person drills a hole in the boat, we're all sinking. And that's why we have to make sure that we look out for each other and inspire each other, that we are all inspired Jews and trying the best we can to observe Hashem's commandments. And that was added by this covenant. That's another possibility. Others want to say that Tzoror Hamor wants to say that the reason why, what was the necessity of the second covenant over the first covenant was that over here it explicitly states that Hashem is making a covenant with future generations. As the verse says, Asher Esasha Yeshnei Po, the ones that are here, standing here today, Imanu Hayom, the people that are standing over here today in the plains of Moab, the Jews that were standing next to the Jordan River when Moshe Rabbeinu was speaking to them, the Es Asher Einenu Po, and those that are not here. It's this covenant is including all the Jewish people, all generations, forever and ever, which wasn't stated explicitly at Har Sinai. Even though we are known, the Medrash tells us that all the souls were standing at Har Sinai. But there it isn't stated explicitly that Hashem is making a covenant with all the people for all the generations. But over here, this time, the covenant was made explicitly with every single one. And it doesn't mean it was made with our fathers and we are included in our parents, being that we're their descendants, so we're included in their commitment. And it's not like our parents made the commitment on our behalf. That's not what it means. It means that literally Hashem made the covenant with all future generations directly. That means we all sealed, we all agreed to this agreement on the keeping of mitzvahs directly. And that is what this covenant adds over the first covenant. The interesting thing is that Rashi doesn't ask the question. And Rashi doesn't seem to offer an explanation of why we need to have a covenant stated over here in the end of the Torah after we've already had a covenant at the beginning at Har Sinai. Rashi generally answers every question. He's here to smooth the Chumash out for us that we should be able to learn. He tells us that he comes to explain Pshuta Shel Mukra, the simple meaning of the Pasuk. So when the student reads Chumash and Rashi, he has all the answers that he needs in order to understand. He or she needs to understand the subject. This is a very simple question. This is a covenant that God is making. And the question is, what is being said over here? What is added over here to the covenant? And Rashi is completely silent about it. And so that means one of two things. Either Rashi feels that we can figure it out on our own, it's a simple thing, or he actually explains it. If we look deeper in his words, we look carefully, we read his words carefully, we see that in his comments, even though he might have not explicitly stated the question, he has answered that question. So let's take a look if we can find an answer from the simple pshat of why we have over here a repeat of the covenant, another covenant over the first covenant. So there's an interesting Rashi. When it comes to the pasuk says, "Laman hakim oischa hayom lo la'am," that Hashem says, the pasuk says, "La'avrecha." This is in pasuk Yud Aleph, and I'm going into pasuk Yud Beis. Okay, in verse 11 into verse 12, it says, Moshe, after he says all the Jewish people were gathered, it says, "La'avrecha bebris Hashem elokecha," so that you will go through, you will pass by in a covenant. What does it mean to go through? So Rashi explains, because the style, when people used to make agreements in those days, they would take an animal and cut the animal in half. And then the two people that were joining in this agreement would walk between the two parts of the animal. And that was a sign that they sealed a pact. They made an agreement about something. For whatever reason, that was the ritual of making an agreement. And that's what it means, La'avracha bebris Hashem Elokecha, that the Jewish people were passing through in between these two, whatever it was, there were no animals there, that they were passing through. But it's using it symbolically, that we and God both pass through into this covenant. U'ba'alasay, and in God's oath, Shad Hashem Elokecha koydes imcha hayoim, that Hashem is sealing with you today. And the pasuk continues in the next verse, L'mam, Hakum oischa hayoim loy la'am, in order to establish you today as a nation for God. So Rashi comments on the words Lamam Hakim oischa hayoim loy la'am, to establish you as a people, for him as a people. Rashi says, Kol kachu nichnas l'torach. Hashem is bothering himself so much. Hashem is busying himself so much with this whole project of making a covenant. Why is he so busy? Why is Hashem seem to be so preoccupied with this covenant? Rashi is interesting. He's using the word torach, that Hashem is like bothering himself, taking the time and the effort to establish this covenant. Why? L'mayim kayim o'ischach, in order to fortify you, l'fanav, before him, la'am, for a people. In order to establish you, to fortify you in front of Hashem as a people. So the comment, this is what Rashi says. So the commentators are trying to figure out what exactly is Rashi explaining here. And so much Hashem bothered to put you, to make you into a people. Well, that's what it says in the pasuk. It says Hashem is taking you through the covenant, l'man hakim oischa hayoim loy, to make you into a nation for God. And what did Rashi add? That Hashem is doing this so that you can be a nation for God. The only thing Rashi's adding is so much Hashem is bothering. He's involved so much. He's so preoccupied in doing this. So what is really Rashi saying? What is he adding? So they say, the commentators, and this is almost all the commentators on Rashi, Sifsa Chachamim, Re'em, Rabbi Leo Mizrahi, Gurare, the Maral Prague, whose Yortzeit was just on Shabbos. And they're unanimous, are saying that what Rashi's saying is one thing. The verse seems to imply that the covenant that we're making with God is in order that we become God's people. God is making a covenant so that we should become God's people. The problem is, later it says what the covenant is. The covenant is that we observe the mitzvahs. Hashem is making a covenant, an agreement that we... What is a covenant? We're making a promise, we're making a commitment, we're going to observe Hashem's mitzvahs. And we're not going to transgress them. So later it says already what the covenant is. So Rashi was bothered, what is the pasuk saying over here, earlier, that they're making a covenant to make you into a people? That's not the covenant. The covenant is that we should promise that we will keep the mitzvahs. So therefore they say, that's why Rashi is saying, no, don't read it wrong. When it says, L'mam hakim oischa hayoim, that's not the content of the covenant. The covenant is not to make you into a people. You were a people a long time ago. That's not the idea of the covenant. You're a people. The idea of the covenant, why is Hashem making the covenant? The covenant again is that the idea of the covenant is, like it says later, to keep mitzvahs, that we should observe the commandments. That's the covenant. What does the verse mean, Laman Hakim Oischa? That is, this pasuk is not telling us what the covenant is. This pasuk is explaining, why are we all gathered here now? Why is Hashem so busy and so involved in making this covenant? What's the point of it? Why? We know what it is. The covenant is that we should keep mitzvahs. But why? We have a covenant with God that we will keep mitzvahs. What is the extra covenant over here? Why is he so busy with this? So for that, the pasuk is saying, Hashem is bothering so much to make another covenant because Hashem knows that he can't get out of this relationship. That he has committed himself to a relationship that he can never get out of. Why can't he get out of it? Rashi says it in the next Rashi. Rashi says, because he swore to our forefathers. He swore to our forefathers that we will always be his people. And he will never exchange us with another nation. And therefore, God is stuck in this relationship, so to speak. There is no way out for him. He can't go file for divorce. There is no option of divorce. So it's like someone is getting married and they know there is no way out. This is going to be forever and ever. So then you want to make sure that you're marrying the right one. You should always make sure you're marrying the right one. You should never be thinking of the possibility of a divorce, because marriage really is forever. But by Hashem, Hashem says there is no way out. Therefore, that's why Rashi says Hashem is prohibiting on himself. I'm sorry, that's why Hashem is giving you all these oaths. You shouldn't anger him, because you will anger him and he can't leave. Right? Because Achashehu eina yachal libadal mikem. Because he's not able to separate from you. That's what Rashi says. So this is their explanation. Again, they're saying that the only thing Rashi means when he says, you know, God is bothering, is they're trying to explain that this is not the content of the covenant. Covenant is we will keep mitzvahs. That's the agreement. This is only explaining, Laman doesn't mean the covenant. Laman goes on the previous pasuk. When it says Hashem is gathering you into a covenant, why is he so busy with this? Because Hakim Ois Chaloy La'am, because he has established you as a people forever, and therefore there's no way out. So therefore he wants to make sure that we're going to keep our part of the agreement at all. So we're going to be loyal Jews, and he will be happy in this relationship. Hashem wants to assure that he will be happy in the relationship and not be upset all the time because he's committed, and yet it's not working out. Okay? However, it seems like there must be much more to this Rashi, for a simple reason, because according to this, Rashi is only explaining one word, the word laman. He's not explaining any difference in the word hakim oischa hayom la'am. You are being established as a nation for God. That is not changing. Rashi's not explaining that. Rashi's just explaining the words laman. That laman doesn't mean this is the covenant, but laman means this is the reason why he's bothering for it. So usually when Rashi explains something, he just picks that word that he's explaining. Why does Rashi bring in his heading, in his quote, he brings five words. Hakim oischa hayom la'am. Why does he need that? And the other thing over here is, when Rashi is quoting the pasuk, after he quotes it, he says, listen to these words. He says, kol kachu nechnas l'torach. Hashem is going so much into being bothered. And why is he doing it? Laman kayim oischa. In order to fortify you, lefanav before him, la'am for a people. Okay, seems to be quoting the pasuk. But the interesting thing is, he's not quoting the pasuk, he's misquoting the pasuk. Instead of the word laman hakim, which the pasuk says, to establish you, Rashi says laman kayom. It's a different word. Kayom means to sustain, to substantiate. The pasuk says laman hakim, to establish. The other thing is when the pasuk says laman hakim oischa loy la'am, to him for a people, Rashi says the word oischa lefanav. Hashem is establishing you, and I'm sorry, Hashem is fortifying you lefanav, in front of him. And he omits the word hayom. He doesn't say, the pasuk says laman hakim oischa hayom lo la'am, that Hashem is establishing you today for him, for a people. Rashi changes two of the words. He says, he lets out the word hayom, he doesn't quote it. And then he says, laman kayom, instead of laman hakim. And then instead of lo to him, he says lefanav, in front of him, la'am. So therefore, it seems like Rashi's trying to tell us something more than what these commentators are saying. Rashi's really explaining something very fundamental here. And because really what Rashi is not just explaining why the pasuk is needed. Rashi's interpreting the pasuk. He's actually translating for us how to read these words, laman hakim oischa loy la'am. And what's his pirush? What is he explaining? See, Rashi was bothered with a different question. Rashi's bothered with the question we asked before. Why was this entire covenant necessary? The covenant was already earlier. Not only that, the pasuk is saying, hear the words. The pasuk is saying that Hashem is establishing you today as a people. Sorry, not laman hakim, that the Jewish nation is becoming a godly nation today. This is at the end of the 40 years. What do you mean we were just becoming a nation? We became a nation a very long time ago, 40 years earlier. That was disturbing him. What bothered him in this whole pasuk was one word, laman hakim oischa hayoim, today you became a godly nation. Therefore, Rashi says, oh, let me explain that to you. Of course, the Jewish people were a nation from Har Sinai. We have to change the word Hakim. Hakim over here doesn't mean to establish you. Hakim over here means Kayam, to sustain you. What is the meaning? Our covenant with God that Hashem made with us at Sinai, at Har Sinai the first time, was a covenant that wasn't necessarily going to last forever. It was an agreement. It's like people go into an agreement. If you will do so, I will do so. If you step out of the agreement, I'll step out of the agreement. So there was a possibility for us to keep or not to keep. The first covenant was a breakable covenant. It wasn't necessarily going to be forever. The second covenant, according to Rashi, comes to fortify, to strengthen, and to give durability to the first covenant. That the covenant that we made for Sinai, at Har Sinai, should never be able to be broken. And that's why Rashi intentionally changes the word. Instead of Hakim, Hakim means Hashem established us as a people. Rashi says, don't read it that way. It's not He establishes us. He established us already then. Laman Kayom, Hashem fortified us now. At the end of the 40 years, Hashem is fortifying. Hashem is knocking in strong pegs into this covenant in order that the wind should not be able to blow it around, in order that nothing should be able to break this covenant. It should last for all of time. And that is the reason why the pasuk over here clearly says, because this is the content, this is the whole nature, this is the whole reason of this covenant. Is that this should be it's meant to take the commitment both from God to us and from us to God and make it eternal forever and ever. That's the reason why in this covenant it's mentioned the people, the generations that are here and the generations that are not here. Because this is speaking of an eternal bond with God and Israel forever and ever, which was not necessarily at least visible in the first covenant that we made on Har Sinai. But this one has that durability. And that's the whole content of it. Laman kayem oischa, to establish you forever. Now, God on His part can make a commitment that He is in it forever. Like Rashi says in the next Rashi. How is He going to assure that we are in it forever? What happens if we go astray? What happens if the Jewish people get distracted? What happens if we get pulled into other things? So how is He going to make sure that we on our end, we are kind of flaky, we are not God, we're not as, we're weak. So what is going to be the assurance that the Jewish people are going to keep this covenant forever? So Rashi adds one word. That the covenant that God did to the Jewish people, Rashi changes. Instead of it saying, lo la'am, to Him for a people, Rashi says, leman kaya moischa lefanov li'am, in front of Him as a people. And this is a very, very, it seems to be a small nuance, but it is a huge difference. And it makes a very big difference. If we say the Jewish people are a nation for God, lo la'am, for Him for a God, a king can be a king over a nation, and the nation can be far away, thousands of miles away from the palace. The king doesn't necessarily always, see, lo la'am, we belong to Him, but we can be distant, we can be far. If we are far from Hashem, if we don't feel Him, if we don't feel the divine presence, if we don't feel God's sovereignty over us right now, all the time, if we don't sense it and don't feel it, it's possible that we will lose our focus. We chas v'shalom can go off. That's why Hashem says, you know what this covenant is going to do? This covenant is going to accomplish that it should be lefanov li'am, that the Jewish people are always standing in front of Hashem. In other words, that we're aware. What's the difference? Lo la'am means we belong to Him, but we can be far away. Lefanov la'am means we are standing right in front of Him. We are right in front of God. We're in front of His face. When you're standing in front of the face of the king, you can't rebel against Him. So what is the idea of this covenant? The idea of this covenant was meant to impart into the Jewish people a sense and a feeling that Hashem is here all the time. And this had a very, very powerful effect on our souls until today, that there is a consciousness, there's a certain awareness of Hashem's presence, of Hashem being as a result of this covenant. Lefanov li'am, for him to a people. And that's why Rashi also says at the beginning, he says, kol kach hu nechnas l'torach, so much Hashem is bothering. Because again, person can ask the question, if the first covenant was broken, and if the first covenant was not forever, what is going to assure that the second covenant is going to be forever? What makes the second covenant stronger than the first covenant? So therefore, Rashi adds the words, and he says, kol kachu nichnas l'torach, that in this covenant, Hashem didn't just make a covenant. In this covenant, Hashem bothered. Hashem got himself very occupied, very involved. What do we see in this covenant? Hashem is more invested, more involved than in the first covenant. We see that because the pasuk says, La'avrecha bebris. Hashem is crossing with you in a covenant. See, by Har Sinai, it doesn't say those words, that Hashem is crossing through a covenant. Even though the pasuk says, La'avrecha, to make you cross through the covenant. We explained it earlier. Crossing through the covenant meant going through the two pieces of the animals in which you go through. But from the mashal that Rashi gives, that both people that make an agreement, both of them go through, this is implying that not only the Jewish people passed through in this covenant, but Hashem himself also passed in this covenant. So you saw that this covenant had more involvement, more of Hashem's doing than the first covenant. Also, this covenant was accompanied by curse, by the Allah, by the oath, and the curse, chas v'shalom. So there was more involvement from Hashem, and that's where you see that this one will not be broken. And its impact is on the Jewish people as well. Rashi's adding, that we said earlier, Rashi's adding the word, not loy la'am, to him for a people. Rashi says, lefanov, that we should always feel that we're before him, in front of him. And if we're in front of him, that will assure the Jews will be conscious, and we will always stay on the path. And we are on the path. The biggest proof, it's 3,500 years later, and we're still learning Chumash, right now, today. So the Jewish people are still on the path. Of course, there is here and there, but we're doing pretty good, 3,500 years later, and we're still committed to Torah and mitzvahs. And that is because of this covenant. And that's the added, l'man kayam oyscha l'fanav l'am, that we've been established in the second covenant over the first covenant. Now, as we explained many times, every Rashi, even if it's here to explain something on the simple level, has inner depth and has esoteric elements of the Torah in it. So once we have this idea that there's two covenants that Hashem made with the Jewish people, one covenant was on Har Sinai, which was a covenant in which we became a people. We were made into a people. But it isn't necessarily going to last forever. And then there is a second covenant, which was made right before we went into the land. And this is what strengthened and made the first covenant eternal and forever, lasting. But there are two covenants. So we'll see over here that this is all really, on the mystical level, all this is taking place in Rosh Hashanah. The Zohar tells us that every time it says in the Torah, Hayom, plain Hayom, without saying which day it is, it's referring to Rosh Hashanah. So when it says in the beginning of the parasha, Atem Nitzavim Hayom, you are standing today in front of God. Atem Nitzavim Hayom, you're standing today. The Zohar says that that's referring to Rosh Hashanah. Every Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish people stand in front of Hashem, all the Jewish people. And we are going into a covenant with Hashem on Rosh Hashanah. We are entering into a covenant, into agreement with Hashem on Rosh Hashanah. Now, what's the content of this covenant? Well, the pasuk is saying, "Laman hakim oyscha hayom lo la'am." Now, we are going into a covenant with God to become God's people. But as we explained earlier, the covenant to become God's people is not in this parsha. The covenant to become God's people happened earlier at Har Sinai, in Parshas Yisro. It's not happening here. What is the content of this covenant? Is to make that covenant that we've become a godly people, to make that lasting. So we have to say that in our covenant with Hashem on Rosh Hashanah, it's not like we are becoming a people, but it's in order to give a permanence to our relationship with Hashem. However, we find something else very special. And that is in last week's Parsha, Parshas Kisovo, in Perek Chav Zayin, Pasuk Tes, it says, Moshe says to the Jewish people, Haskes Ushma Yisrael. Listen, Moshe says to the Jewish people. Hayom azeh vizdei nihiyesa la'am l'Hashem Elokecha. You have become a nation for God. So Moshe says to the Jewish people, today, hayom azeh, today you have become a nation to God. So again, over there it says hayom, on this day, you become. And what did we say? The Zohar says every time it says hayom, it's referring to Rosh Hashanah. But in this pasuk, it doesn't say to establish you as a nation, to fortify you rather, to strengthen you as a nation. It says, Hanuyoy mazel on this day nihiyesa la'am. You have become a people. So what does that tell you? That on Rosh Hashanah, two things are happening. There is a first covenant and a second covenant taking place simultaneously on Rosh Hashanah. Hayoy mazel on this day in Parshas Kisavo, it says, on this day nihiyesa la'am. You become a people. Rosh Hashanah, we become God's nation. And then in addition to that, there is a second covenant happening in Rosh Hashanah, in which Hashem is giving strength to that covenant and giving a permanence to that and lasting power to that relationship, to that bond, to that covenant. So we need to understand, what is the difference? What is the content? What is the meaning to us on these? What is our avoda? What is our service on these two levels of covenants that are happening on Rosh Hashanah? And what does it mean that this is happening on Rosh Hashanah? I mean, this happened way back then. Hashem made a covenant with our ancestors at Har Sinai, and then we had a second covenant before we entered the land. But what is the meaning of these two covenants as it relates to our yearly commitment to Hashem on Rosh Hashanah? And then we have two covenants on Rosh Hashanah. So now let's take a look a little bit of the difference between the way the two covenants are mentioned. The first covenant that is mentioned in Parshas Kisavo, which says, Hayom azeni yesala'am, on this day you have become a people, the Pasuk says, Hayom hazeh, on this day you have become a people. Hayom hazeh, on this day. In our Pasuk, in Parshas Nitzavim, it says, Leman hakim oischa hayom lo la'am. Today you have become a nation to God. So what is the difference? Not become. You have been fortified as a nation for God. So if you notice, the difference is that in the first pasuk in Kisavo, it says, Hayom hazeh, this day, you have become a God, a nation to Hashem. And over here in Parshas Nitzavim, it says, Hayom plain, and it doesn't say Hayom hazeh, on this day. So take notice of that. Here you have Hayom hazeh, and here you have Hayom. Now interesting, both the word Hayom and the word hazeh relates to Rosh Hashanah, specifically. Hayom relates to Rosh Hashanah because the Zohar tells us, whenever it says Hayom, plain, Hayom, the day, which day is the day? Rosh Hashanah. Because it is the most important day. It is the most exciting day. God becomes king over the universe. God creates the world. It's the day. So Hayom is the day. The word zeh also implies Rosh Hashanah. Where do we find that zeh implies Rosh Hashanah? It says in the Pasuk, we say it on Rosh Hashanah, zeh hayom tchilas masecha. This is the day of the beginning of your work. It says zeh hayom tchilas masecha. Zeh, which zeh? We're pointing to Rosh Hashanah. And we're saying zeh, you see this day? Hayom tchilas masecha. This is the day of the beginning of your work. So zeh means Rosh Hashanah. So here we have an interesting thing. We have two covenants. One on last week's parasha, talking about forging the Jewish people into a nation for God. And then we have another covenant mentioned in this week's parasha, not forging the Jewish people, but sustaining the Jewish people. Both of them happen on Rosh Hashanah every single year. Regards to the regards to forging us as a nation. We refer to Rosh Hashanah as Hayom Hazeh. Double meaning, double wording meaning Rosh Hashanah. Hayom on itself means Rosh Hashanah. Hayom Hazeh, Zeh means Rosh Hashanah. It's double language Rosh Hashanah. Hayom Hazeh. That's in that covenant. This covenant, the one that gives durability, permanence, and lasting power to our relationship, this one, it says Hayom, and it doesn't say the word Zeh. Hayom, l'man hakim oyscha Hayom lo la'am, without the word Zeh. So what is the meaning of this? Is there something to be derived from it? So you see, these seems to be little nuances, but they carry very, very profound and very deep ideas in the understanding of what Rosh Hashanah is, and the understanding to our preparation for Rosh Hashanah. And the idea is like this. In regards to Rosh Hashanah, there is a pasuk that says, Zeh hayom tchilas masecha. We mentioned the pasuk before. This is the day of the beginning of your work. Zikaron liyom rishon, a remembrance for the first day. Simply, it means Rosh Hashanah is the beginning of God's work. Why is Rosh Hashanah the beginning of God's work? Because Rosh Hashanah is the anniversary of the world. Rosh Hashanah is the birthday of creation. But hold it. Is that really so? Is Rosh Hashanah really the birthday of the world? Did Hashem really create the world on Rosh Hashanah? Rosh Hashanah was the conclusion of creation. The sages tell us, when did Hashem create the world? Hashem created the world on the 25th day of Elul. B'chaf hei be'elul nivra olam. The birthday of the world is going to be in 5 days, 4 days. Now we enter the 21st of Elul. On the 25th of Elul this year is going to be the 5,774th birthday of the world. On the 25th of Elul. So hold it. You have a question. A double question. Question number one, why do we celebrate Rosh Hashanah on the first day of Tishrei, which is 6 days into creation? Bereishis bara lakim es ha-shamayim v'sa'aretz. God created heaven and earth. He created light on the 25th day of Elul. On the 26th day of Elul, God created, split the heavens, the sky, and split the waters. On the 28th day of Elul, Hashem brought forth all vegetation and brought about, gathered all the waters into one place, dry land. On the 4th day of creation, Hashem put up the sun, the moon, and the stars into orbit. On the 5th day of creation, all the insects, birds, fish were created. The 6th day of creation, animal. And finally, at the end, the Friday, noontime, the human being was created. So when we're celebrating that, and that is when? That is the first day of Tishrei. So if we're going to make Rosh Hashanah, shouldn't we make Rosh Hashanah on the beginning of the creation? When God created the world. Why are we waiting for the 6th day? And secondly, the pasuk seems to be incorrect. The pasuk is saying, Zeh hayom tchilas masecha. This is the day of the beginning of your work. It isn't true. Rosh Hashanah, we're saying about Rosh Hashanah, this is the day. The beginning of your work. It's not the beginning of the work. It should have said, Zeh hayom sof masecha. This is the day of the end of your work. Right after man was created, what happens next? Vayachulu ha-shamayim va'aretz. God completed all the work of the heaven and the world. We're at the completion. We ended already. What do you mean, Zeh hayom tchilas masecha? This is the beginning of your work. It's not Zeh. It's not tchilas masecha. It's not the beginning. Another thing is, the very pasuk itself contradicts itself. The verse itself contradicts itself. That pasuk, it says, Zeh hayom tchilas masecha. This is the day of the beginning of your work. And then it concludes, Zikaron, a remembrance, Liyom Rishon, to the first day. Telling us, hold it. This is the day of the first day of creation. Implying that creation begins today. On Rosh Hashanah, creation starts. But then it says, Zikaron, it's only a remembrance, Liyom Rishon, to the first day. It's only commemorating the first day. Which makes sense, because it's not really... See, if Rosh Hashanah would be on the birthday of the world, if Rosh Hashanah would be the 25th of Elul, then it would be Zeh hayom, Tchilas Masecha. Then it would be the beginning, this day, Rosh Hashanah is the beginning of your work. But since it's not on the 25th of El, Rosh Hashanah is on the sixth day. It's on the first day of Tishrei, which is the sixth day of creation. That's why it says Zikaron. It's a remembrance, Liom Rishon, to the first day. It's not really the birthday. It's like a late birthday party. You know, see, someone says, my birthday was last week, but I was busy. I couldn't have a chance. I'm making my birthday party now. So it's like a remember, but then it's like, you know, it's not really a birthday. Right? So the same is like with Rosh Hashanah. First we say, Zayom, this is the day. Everybody get excited. The world now, today, everything starts today. And then we go, Zikaron Liyom Rishon. It's a remembrance to the first day, because it's really not the birthday of the world, because that was on the 25th. Now it's already the sixth day. We missed the birthday. But then, if that's the case, if it's only Zikaron, so why does the Pasuk say, Zahayom Tchilas Masechah? This is the day of the beginning of the work. So which one is it? Is it the beginning or is it not the beginning? So all these questions are answered as follows. Remember what the questions were. First of all, why don't we make Rosh Hashanah on the really first day of creation? Secondly, how can the Pasuk say this is the beginning of your creation? And thirdly, how does the beginning of the verse fit with the end of the verse? And the answer to that, all of it, is as follows. We don't make Rosh Hashanah when God created heaven and earth, because heaven and earth is purposeless before the human being emerges. As beautiful, as magnificent, as unbelievably exquisite the creation is, it's meaningless. It doesn't have any value until the crown jewel of creation emerges, and that is the human being. The human being completes the creation and is the purpose of the creation. Hashem created the world so that he can be a king and have subjects. Subjects will serve him. He will be, and he will do kindness to his subjects that will serve him. He wanted a relationship. The relationship was one of king and subjects. Till the human being came, there was no one to recognize God's sovereignty. There was no one to acknowledge, and there was no one to surrender. There was no one to accept Hashem's kingdom. There was no one to crown Hashem as a king. So the world was lifeless. The world was lacking content, was lacking meaning. Finally comes Adam HaRishon. He's created, and he gave life to the world. He gave meaning to the world. And that is the reason why we don't make Rosh Hashanah, we don't celebrate creation when God made the empty shell, the heavens and the earth, because that's not really the beginning. Nothing started then. It was a preparation for creation. You want to know when creation really happens? When the human being is created, that's when we have creation. So that's the reason why the Torah gives us Rosh Hashanah on the sixth day when man is created. Even deeper than that. That is his explanation that we'll have. Man is the most important part of creation. But after all, there still is a creation a few days earlier. It's just lacking. It's lacking its shine. It's lacking its brilliance. Or it's lacking its soul. But there's something much deeper than that. And that is that every year, Rosh Hashanah, we're not commemorating a birthday of the world. It's not just the anniversary of the world that we're commemorating. We're making a birthday party for the creation. But we're being reborn again. Rosh Hashanah, creation is coming into existence all over again. God is recreating the universe on Rosh Hashanah. According to the mystics, and according to Hasidus, Erev Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Hashanah Eve, the creation comes to an end. It's as if the creation doesn't exist anymore. The life force of the world retracts. The soul of creation returns back into God. Meaning God's interest in being a creator and sustaining the world and giving life to the world is not here anymore. It expires. And the worlds don't exist. What do you mean don't exist? They exist, but they exist very superficially. They exist very weakly. It's a very lethargic existence. It's a dead existence. There's no life in the world. Rosh Hashanah by night. Rosh Hashanah by day, when we come to shul, and we'll all be in shul next week Wednesday. How fortunate are we, the Jewish people, that we can gather together in shul, sing God's praises together, unify with all Jews all across the world, and cry out, Hashem Melech, Hashem Moloch, Hashem Yimloch, Le'olam Vod. Blow the shofar and crown God as a king. And evoke within our Creator a desire to invest Himself and recreate the world again. So Rosh Hashanah Hashem is really, it's a new creation. Even though there's every second, to some degree, and the creation is constantly being recreated. But then it's just renewing the old, every moment, every day. On Rosh Hashanah, it's really new. It's a new creation every Rosh Hashanah. And that's the reason why when we say, Zahayom Tchilas Masecha, this is the day of the beginning of your work. It really is the beginning of your work. Rosh Hashanah is the beginning of the work, literally. Because today, creation begins. On next week, Wednesday, there's going to be a new world that God created that day. So it's not just a commemoration. If it would be a commemoration, we can't say it, and it's Zayom Tchilas Masecha, because the first creation was created on the 25th of Elul. And this is created when an Aleph Tishrei, and we're commemorating Aleph Tishrei. It's like a late birthday party, as we mentioned earlier. But it's not that way, because we're not commemorating an old creation. Today, Zehayoim, today, the world is being created. Tchilas Masecha, it's the beginning of your work. So in our yearly cycle, as Rosh Hashanah repeats itself for the last 5,772 times, besides the first time, okay, we had 5,773 Rosh Hashanahs. But for the 5,772 last Rosh Hashanahs that there were, was all those Rosh Hashanahs were not exactly like the first time. Because the first time when God created the world, when did He create it? On the 25th day of Elul. From the second year and onward, creation does not take place on the 25th of Elul. It's a nice day to mark in the calendar. That's a birthday. That's a nice birthday. We can make a nice birthday cake for the world on the 25th of Elul. That's it. When does Rosh Hashanah happen? When is it the beginning of creation? That happens on Rosh Hashanah. Because on Rosh Hashanah, Hashem gets an interest in creating the creation. And not only an interest, and He recreates it. And He gives life for the world for another year. So it really is the beginning. Zahayoyim Tchilas Masecha. This is the day of the beginning of the work. So now we need to understand, why is that? Why can't Hashem keep things on schedule? What is, if the first time He created them, if the date, if God liked for whatever reason the 25th of Elul, I don't know why He chose that day. But for whatever reason, this is the day that Hashem wanted to create the world. This is an important day. He marked it in His calendar. 25th of Elul, I'm creating the world. All right? So then why does He change it? And from now on, wait until the first day of Tishrei to create. Why doesn't He continue every year to create on the 25th of Elul? And the answer is, because there's a fundamental difference between how Hashem created the world the first time and how Hashem creates the world now. When Hashem created the world the first time, He created it on His own. He created it of His own volition. He did it because He wanted to be a creator and create the world. The reason why He did it on His own, because if He wants to wait for someone to do it for Him, there's no one there. They can wait forever. There's no one to provoke Him to create, because there's nobody in existence, only Him. So of course He has to create it on His own. However, from that year and on, Hashem's desire is that we, His subjects, should be involved in our very own creation. We, His people, should stimulate and excite Him in creating us. That He should want to create us because we make ourselves desirable. We make ourselves beautiful. We make ourselves deserving to be created, and that's how He creates us. He wants the creation to come from us. That's why He does not do it on the 25th of Elul. Because the 25th of Elul is a day when Hashem creates from His chesed, from kindness, on His own. That was worked one time, because as the pasuk says in Bereishis, "Va'adam ayin," there is no man lavodes adama. There's no man to do work, to do any avoda, to do any service, to deserve being created. There's no human being. But after, since that day and on, from the second year, once Adam Arishon was created, so on that day, now we can do something and get Hashem excited to create us. And that's why Hashem waits every year until Aleph Tishrei to create. So now, the question then becomes, which creation is a greater creation? Which creation is a stronger creation? The creation that Hashem created the first year, a creation that was created out of God's initiative, out of Hashem's desire to create, without any human involvement, or the creation that we create the world, that we help the world be born through the blowing of the shofar. It's a phenomenal idea. We're blowing the shofar, and we're blowing the world into existence. The shofar is the birth canal through where the cosmos are coming into existence. Isn't that amazing? All of existence is being blown out through the shofar. It's emerging into existence. Which world is a greater world? The world that Hashem created back then, or the world that we create, or rather we should say we stimulate Him to create every year? So we might think the world that God created is a greater world, because we're weak, we're small, we're tiny, we're so insignificant. Maybe if we deserve and we can do something to stimulate a creation, but how powerful are we? But a world that is being created out of God's initiative, it's His program, it's His desire, it's His energy. Wow, that's so much greater. But it's not that way. The creation that we create, or we cause God to create as a result of our work, is a far more powerful creation. It's a stronger creation. And we see that in the dates. Let's take a look at the dates in which the two creations take place. God's creation took place when? On the 25th of Elul. Our creation takes place when we assist Hashem in creating the world. When does that creation happen? On the 1st of Tishrei. What's the difference between these two dates? So the 25th, in Hebrew, every letter has a number. So 25 is the letter Chaf He, which spells the word Ko. The word Ko, which means so. Ko is so. Familiar with the word from the phrase Ko Amar Hashem. So God said. Rosh Hashanah, however, the first day of Tishrei is the first, it's Aleph, okay, the number of the day, but it's a day connected not with the word Ko, it's connected with the word Zeh. How do you know Rosh Hashanah is connected with the word Zeh? We said earlier, Zeh Hayom Tchilas Masecha. On Rosh Hashanah we say, Zeh, this is the day. The creation that Hashem created the world is created with the power of Ko, Chav He. Ko and Zeh. Now do we find them ever, these two words being related one to each other? These two words, Ko and Zeh? Well, I find an interesting thing. The sages tell us that all prophets, whenever they initiated a prophecy, whenever they open up their prophecy, how do they open up the prophecy? What is the first words they say? Throughout all the prophets, they all open up with the words, Ko Amar Hashem, so said God. And that's true about every prophet. Aside for one prophet, who prophesies with the word Ko Amar Hashem a few times, but also prophesies with another prophet, and that is Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu would say prophecy with the word Zeh. Zeh Hadavar Ashatziva Hashem. This is the word that God said, that God commanded. You have it in the beginning of Parshas Matos. Many places Moshe uses the word Zeh. So the sages say Moshe is greater than all the other prophets because they prophesize with Ko and Moshe prophesizes with Zeh. To understand, what is the difference if you're using the word Ko or if you're using the word Zeh? Ko, the word Ko means something like this. The sages say the difference between Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy and the other prophets is Ko means something like this, God said. I'm not exactly sure, or I can't really give it to you clearly, but it was something like this. Zeh means crystal clear, pointing with your finger. This is it. It's clear, it's open, it's revealed. Zeh hadavar, this is what God said. The sages compare it to a person having a vision and two people are looking through a window. One person is looking through a very clean window and seeing what's happening. The other person is looking through a frosted window. So you ever look through a frosted window? Sometimes they'll put it like on a bathroom door or something like that. They'll put a window with like, you can't see anything. And even if you can see, it's very blurry vision. There's nothing that you see, you can't see. But the clear window, it's a clear window, clarity. Moshe Rabbeinu looked through clarity, so clearly. When Moshe spoke to God, he can see in a very acute vision, a very powerful, clean vision. It was conspicuous what he saw, clear. The other sages saw blurriness. They saw something. They saw much more than anybody else. That's why they were prophets. But it was a blurry vision. So Ko represents blurriness, and Zer represents clarity. And that's the difference between the creation that God created and the creation that we create. The creation that Hashem created, He created on the 25th of Elul, a day that is called Ko, because what kind of creation did God create? A creation in which godliness, in which divinity is blurry, in which Hashem is blurred. Because when you're looking at the creation is concealing, blocking, and obscuring God. So Hashem desired. He desired to create a world that is not shining with brilliant godly light. Hashem decided to hide, to camouflage in the creation, to conceal himself, to masquerade behind nature. Now, of course, it's not totally opaque. It's not totally dark. Because Hashem wanted that when you look at nature, you should be able to detect that there is a creator. If someone studies nature, you have to come to the conclusion there is a God that created it, but it's not visible. It's not totally open. It's not Zeh. It's Ko. You can see Hashem, but you can see Hashem very vaguely. That's the creation of Ko on the 25th of El. What is the job of the human being? The job of Adam Arishon was, when Adam came on the world, through his Torah and through his mitzvahs, even though Adam Arishon didn't really have the Torah, he didn't really have the mitzvahs. But the sages tell us that Hashem put him into Gan Eden, la'avda la'shamra, to work the garden and to guard the garden. And the sages say, what does it mean to work the garden and to guard the garden? It means to work it by doing the positive commandments and to guard it by guarding himself from the prohibitive commandments. Which means Adam Arishon, had he not sinned with the sin of the Eitz Hadas, of the tree of knowledge, he would have kept all the Torah and do all the mitzvahs. When Adam Arishon was learning Torah and two mitzvahs, what was he bringing into the world? Adam Arishon was bringing a revelation of Hashem himself into the world in a manner in which you can say, Zeh Hadavar, this is God. The creation on its own without the human being is a creation that has a tiny little vague expression of God in it. But the creation after Adam is created, Adam cries out and calls out and reveals godliness in the world in a manner of Zeh. That's why when Adam Arishon was created, he cried out and he said, L'chu nerana no Hashem, let us go sing to God. Narua l'tzir yesheinu, let us sing, let us blow trumpets. Letzuri, that's what you see. Adam Arishon blew shofar, the first Narua. Let us blow Letzuri Yeshenu to the rock of our salvation. So Adam Arishon recognizes Hashem, speaks of Hashem, reveals God in a very visible, in a very concrete manner in the world, and that's why on Rosh Hashanah is a day of Zeh, because Adam is here, and he is the man who brings Zeh to the world. What is the first time, interesting, what is the first time Moshe Rabbeinu uses the word Zeh in the Torah? Initially, when he's in Egypt, when he comes to Paro, every time he says Ko Amar Hashem. When he speaks about the plague, he says Ko. The first time he says Zeh is when he says Achodesh HaZeh Lochem Rosh Chadashim. He's introducing the first mitzvah to the Jewish people. Making a calendar, he says Achodesh HaZeh. Because the whole point of Torah and mitzvahs is to bring the Zeh into the world. A very revealed and open revelation of Hashem in the world. So that's the difference between the creation as it is on its own, when God creates it. It's a blurry creation, a foggy creation. And the creation that comes about when Adam is put into the creation. But here's an interesting thing. And here's a very interesting thing. When God created Adam Arishon entered into what kind of a creation did he enter? He entered into a creation that was created on the 25th of El. Adam entered into a creation that was kind of dark. His job was that he was going to make a contribution. What was his contribution? Later, 6 days later, when he was created, he would begin to reveal godliness in the world. He would introduce Zeh into a world of Ko. That was the way it was the first year. We, however, have something very special. What is the specialty of our world? The way we have our world. Our world initially, understand, what's the novelty over us over Adam? The novelty of us over Adam is that when we create all of creation as a result of our mitzvahs on Rosh Hashanah, and as a result of our shofar, and of us crowning God as a king, we don't only establish ourselves, it's not only about man, we're recreating all of creation. As we said earlier, today's days, all of creation, nothing happens on the 25th of Elul. Today's days, everything happens on Rosh Hashanah. That means that what kind of a creation is created? What kind of a creation emerges into existence? It's a very Jewish creation, a very holy creation, a creation that grows out of a deep commitment of the Jewish people to be God's servants in this world, and that's what creates, that's the very nucleus, that's the very power in creation. That's what establishes the entire creation. That means that the whole world, which is generally a world of Ko, of 25, a blurry world, now that we are creating it not on the 25th of Elul, but we're creating it as a result of our connection to Hashem on Aleph Tishrei. So now the creation itself, which is generally a blur, a koi creation, now becomes a zeh creation, or it's touching the zeh. Because the human being, the Jew, who's now standing in the shoes of Adam Arishan, and is doing Adam Arishan's job of l'chun eranan al Hashem, of Hashem moloch geyus lovish, of boyu nishtachavel, let us come and bow down, nichra'o, let us kneel, l'fnei Hashem oisenu, the human being who's proclaiming God as a sovereign ruler, and submitting himself to the Eibishter's, to the service of Hashem, and as a result of that, he is initiating and stimulating creation. The creation that is created is a purer creation. It's a more refined creation. It's a cleaner creation. The creation is also enhanced with a much deeper love of Hashem, with a much deeper energy. So what happens in Rosh Hashanah, it's not only that we as people are now being committing ourselves, we want to have a good year. Hashem, give me a good year. Hashem, give me life. Every single one of us is responsible for all of the world. As a result of our commitments, we're having a universal impact. We're impacting everything in the world. Even the oceans, the fish, the trees, the flowers, the distant planets, the stars. All of existence is being renewed. And all of existence is coming to existence as a result of our commitment. And they have a new energy in them. So there are two things that are happening in Rosh Hashanah. There is man's connection to God on their own, which is the Zeh element. And then there is the man's connection to Hashem as he influences Maaseh Bereishis, the work of creation, which should happen on the 25th of Elul, but it doesn't happen the 25th of Elul. It's now created by man. So it's similar to something like this. You know, you see a person who has a project, and they really were excited about something. They worked on something. They started this, whatever it is that they started, an organization. They started something. They built. They started building something. They're very invested. But they have lots of challenges and a lot of frustrations. After a while, what happens? They start losing their excitement in their project, and it stops becoming interesting. And even when they do work on it, the work is lacking life. They're going about their business, and they're just doing it so uninvolved, unexcitedly. Then when someone comes and sits with them and re-sparks and reignites within them an appreciation, the reason why they created it in the first place, the reason why they started this organization, the reason why they started building this project from the beginning, and someone comes and revives their initial spark, their initial love, then automatically what happens, all the work that they do, everything they do, from picking up phone calls, to answering emails, to picking, to making, whatever, I don't know, whatever things you do, whichever you're involved, which are all little details in your work, are suddenly invigorated with extra life, with extra energy, because now you're fully alive in them. So too, when the human beings, when Jews and Rosh Hashanah crown Hashem and a king, it's not just us. It's all of creation, because everything that Hashem is doing, the entire Maaseh Bereishis, is now pumping with life. Because Hashem has a new delight and a new pleasure in all of creation as a result of mankind. So what's happening is that the Zeh, which is the human being, is influencing the Ko, the 25, the level of Ko, which is creation without the human. Now the two are merged together and they unify together. That's the difference between why Rosh Hashanah has two names. Rosh Hashanah is called Hayom, and Rosh Hashanah is called Hayom HaZeh. Because these are referring to two dimensions of Rosh Hashanah. There's one element to Rosh Hashanah, it's the day that God creates the world. It's the world, that's Hayom. That's Hayom plane. It's another Indian in Rosh Hashanah. Hayom HaZeh, that Hashem creates the human being. The human being who has a deeper connection, a Zeh connection with Hashem. A very open, manifest, deep inner connection with Hashem. But here's a very important thing. And that is that when we're, that the Zeh, the deep Zeh of the Jew's neshama, of his commitment to God, has to influence the Ko. In other words, we as Jews need to know, we need to feel responsible for the entire universe. It's not just about us, it's not just about my neshama's connection with Hashem. It's about the world. That's why Rosh Hashanah was so busy talking not only about Jews, but about Gentiles. We speak about how when we learned when we that as a we're claiming God as a king, and we speak about how v'yeda kol pol ki ata pialto, everybody's going to know God. V'yavin kol yitzur, and every all creatures will understand ki ata yitzarta, you have formed it. V'yoma kol asha neshama biyapo, everybody that has a soul in his. We're talking about animals. We're talking about little insects. We're talking about all of creation. We're definitely talking about people. We're saying v'yasu kulam aguda echas, all nations of the world will make one aguda, one bond, one unified. All be unified together to serve our Creator. Because Rosh Hashanah, it's not about just us. It's about the influence on the creation, and in some ways, the influence that we have on the co-world, which is the world outside of the Jewish experience, outside of the inner Rosh Hashanah, is even more important than our own connection. Because the most important part in Adam Arishan's work wasn't only him. See, when Adam Arishan on Friday, interesting, when he began to recognize God, it wasn't only that he recognized God. He says he spoke to all the animals and all the creatures that were created before him. And he said to them, Bo'u, come with me. Bo'u, come, nishtachaveh. Let us all bow down, nichro. So they're all joining him. Which means Adam, his connection is bringing them along with it. That's why we find that in the shofar as well, a very interesting thing. We blow shofar, and in Chassidus it says that the blowing of the shofar is a heart-wrenching cry from the depth of one's soul. Is the deepest cry of the neshama. It is expressing the innermost of our soul, yearning for God, yearning for a deeper connection with Hashem. But yet, an interesting thing, we express that sound not directly. We funnel that sound through nothing else but a horn of an animal. Such a primitive instrument. We're taking a horn of an animal and we're blowing a very simple sound. That's the whole point. The point is that the depth of the Jew's neshama, yearning for godly revelation, yearning for oneness with Hashem, should not remain detached, up there, spiritual, up in the heavens, in the inner recesses of the heart, in the depth of the soul. That's not where it's supposed to be. It comes from the inner recesses in the heart, but it's supposed to permeate, involve, engage the most outer elements of creation, all the way to the outer crust of creation, all the way to a horn of an animal. That the horn of the animal is permeated with the soul, with the deep heart-wrenching soul of the innermost of the Jewish soul. The heart-wrenching cry of the innermost of the Jewish soul. Because both of them connected. The Zeh together with the Ko. In our, to conclude and bring it back to the covenant that Hashem makes with us, that's why there are two covenants in Rosh Hashanah. First covenant is a covenant with our neshama. The Zeh and the Ko element within us. The Zeh is our neshama. The Ko is our body. Because our body is part of the physical creation. The Zeh is the part of our being that sees godliness. And that's our neshama. And here is where it works. The first thing is when Hashem at Har Sinai made a covenant with the Jewish people, we said before it wasn't necessarily lasting. Remember we began the shir? That when Hashem made a covenant with the Jewish people, it was a covenant that necessarily might break. That is because that covenant was a covenant with our souls. We became a nation, our souls were selected and chosen by God. Who says that's going to last? It lasted for the 40 years that the Jews were in the desert, it was okay. You know why it was okay? Because in the 40 years the Jews were in the desert, they almost didn't have any bodies. Because they didn't have a physical existence. Their bodies were also like souls. because they were eating man from heaven. They lived a very miraculous existence. But when it came time for the Jewish people to go into the land, and they were going in, and they were going to get engaged in physicality, in physical work, in farming, and the like. So here is where suddenly their physical side is going to be accentuated. Their physical side is going to suddenly emerge and to be there. So Hashem made a new covenant with the Jewish people. The second covenant of God with the Jewish people was a covenant, as we said over here, Rashi says, Kayam, to sustain you. This covenant was with the Jewish body, not with the Jewish soul. Not only, this covenant included the Jewish physical side of the Jew, the body of the Jew. And because this covenant was including the body, that way was going to last forever. Because if it's only with the soul, you don't know. Once they're going to get away from soul existence and get more involved in body existence, they might lose it. But since the covenant now was attached to their physical bodies, all the way to their earthiness, that's why it was going to last forever. And this is the difference what happens in Rosh Hashanah as well. There is a covenant that God makes with our neshama up there in heaven. That is the pure cry of the Jewish soul on Rosh Hashanah. That's the awakening that we have. That's the depth of our commitment to Hashem on Rosh Hashanah. But you know what happens in Rosh Hashanah? We have to be very, 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 very conscious that our commitments in Rosh Hashanah cannot remain just deep spirituality. Even if we're experiencing very, 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 very intense spiritual moments in Rosh Hashanah, it is so important that we recognize that we have to figure out ways how to engage our body as well, how the physical goof of the Yid as well, which means on Rosh Hashanah itself, especially the 10 days after Rosh Hashanah, we have to see how we can act, how we can take this deep soul experience and draw it into physical observance, engaging our physical body as well. Not leave it only in the purity of soul, but engaged in body as well. When Hashem gives us a good year on Rosh Hashanah, Hashem too makes a covenant not only with our soul, but with our bodies. The main thing is in Rosh Hashanah that Hashem gives a Shana Tova to the Jewish people, to everyone, not just a spiritual good year, but a physical good year. Because again, the whole point over here is the power of the Zeh, the power of the depth of a connection, of a deep spiritual connection, has to manifest externally into our body, into the world. Hashem's commitment is to the well-being of our bodies, and our commitment to God is to serve Him with our bodies, not only with our neshama, with our bodies, not only ourselves, to engage the world around us as well, to influence non-Jews, to influence everything in the world and bring it into a relationship with Hashem. That is so important, to ground everything, not to leave it just up there. Then there is a unification of us and Hashem, both from body and soul. These are the two brisin that we make with Hashem, the Hayom connection and the Hayom Hazeh connection. May we merit to be all inscribed in the Book of Life and Aksiva Chasima Tova in the most physical sense, a healthy, happy, and gebenched new year.
Aha! Aha! Ah, al-kisah.